Welcome to I See What You Mean, a podcast about how people get on the same page and stay there, or don't, or perhaps shouldn't. Today my guest is Dale Ludeke. Dale is a federal consulting industry colleague with a background in electrical engineering technology. Dale has served large and small organizations for more than 20 years in both executive operations and business development roles. Dale, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lou. It's really good to see you again. I so appreciate the time I get to spend with you. Thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. My career, you talked about being executive VD and executive management. I started that in 1999. My first executive role was 1999. Before that, my beginning of my career was working on avionics. I did that for 9 years, avionics test. My first 4 years were working at McDonnell Aircraft. But after McDonnell, I went to small business for like 10 years. And that's where I really cut my teeth on the whole idea of you got to market it, you got to win it, and then you got to manage it. That cycle of P&L activities where I learned all that in small business.
Yeah.
But it helped me tremendously because as I got into executive roles, all those foundational things came alive for me.
Yeah.
And there is true in large business that there are in small business. It was outstanding. So I've been to companies like CACI, Unisys, CSC, and I just really had a great time moving back and forth from executive management positions and executive marketing positions. Today I'm in an executive marketing position, which I'm having a wonderful time working with a company driving, if you will, their business development activities. And I will share a lot of things today. A lot of what I share will be my own personal beliefs are not going to necessarily represent where I work today.
Right.
But I do want to make sure I'm sharing the core of what actually makes me and how I view working in the market and actually serving others. That's my real goal.
Thank you. And that's a fair point. One of the things you and I talked about, so you know the show, I See What You Mean, is about the aha moment, the flash of insight we might have when I say, Dale, I see what you mean. And that's part of getting on the same page. So I like to talk about what it means to be on the same page, how we get there, why we don't, even perhaps when we shouldn't. And in our prep call, you made an excellent point, which I agree with very much, which was, I don't think we're meant to be on the same page all the time. You said we are where we are. We've got different levels of education, experience, et cetera, right? Those are sort of all of our backgrounds. And you made the point that we might be meant to relate to each other. The challenge might be more about to relate to each other from those differences than maybe to get on the same page. Tell me more about that. Elaborate on that, because I thought that was a great point.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that a little bit. You know, we live in a world that's got such diversity of thought, background, character, desire. And it's a beautiful set of complexities. It really is. You have to really just stop to think for a minute of how beautiful the complexities are. You see it in nature, you see it in people. And I believe if you're thinking that you need to be on the same page all the time, you're not looking at it in the right way. I believe very firmly that we are meant to relate in this life. I also believe very firmly that we're meant to work at these relationships. They're not meant to be easy. Because if they were just easy, then we would never really learn anything about ourselves or about everybody else for that matter. So being on the same page is important for doing certain things clearly. I'm a big believer in setting and managing expectations constantly. Because it's so hard to work with people when expectations are not
right
there to work from. At the same time, you need to work to get to those set of expectations. Because even the slightest difference can cause disruption
right
when those expectations are not being met or they're not set very well. So being on the same page can be very useful for getting things done. But once they get done, though, it's okay to not be on the same page and to find that new opportunity to get on the same page with somebody else.
Okay, I know you, and I'm going to take a stab at this, I think, as a true statement. You mentioned beautiful complexities. Complexities are beautiful, that richness, that variety. I think you see beauty in that. I think you see God's creation in that. I think you see some wonderful things in that. I think you see opportunity in it.
Oh, definitely.
Do you know,
Definitely.
do you, I know that, I believe that. Do you, and I agree. Do you know people, however? Do you work with people? Have you had folks on teams who maybe were frightened? That's a strong word. Troubled by the complexity, stressed by the complexity. Would you know what I'm saying?
So I would call it fear.
Okay.
Fear. People have fear of a number of different things. Fear, is the exact opposite of faith. You know, when you fear, you're able to func your ability to function is somewhat distorted because now you're afraid of exposing yourself. You're afraid of engaging because you're afraid that someone's going to take advantage of you or they're going to say something about you. That would not be something you would like to be said about you. And so fear, I think when you walk into a room is something that's very real because there's the unknown. People don't know you. They're not too sure where you're coming from, why you're there, what your agenda might be, so on and so forth. So I think fear can actually be very disruptive walking into a room or walking into an engagement. Because people just don't know. And I've felt for a long time now that this comes from the fact that people feel this incessant need to always be right and always be relevant. And as soon as they're being right, and this is including me, by the way, I'm not excluding myself. As soon as being right and relevant is challenged, your defense mechanisms go up because now it's as if somebody's trying to say, well, you're wrong and you're not relevant anymore. And that can be very hurtful, and it can be disassociating, and it can be isolating to
Yes,
you.
yes, yes.
So, working with that thought process, entering into an engagement, I'm kind of characterizing it like this for you. Entering into an engagement with somebody, entering that opportunity to engage with humility and grace. Humility and grace. When you do that, you can enter into a relationship and sustain that relationship because you're giving people room. You're giving them room,
Right.
right? You don't feel like you have to be right and relevant. You're entering in that with humility and grace. Understand, you don't know where they're coming from. You don't necessarily understand their aspirations or their drives and their goals. So you have an ability to give people room to begin the engagement to actually abate the fear that might be with them, right?
Okay.
Now, the second piece of this, though, is you want to get something done, right?
Right.
And so now from moving from an engagement activity to a leadership activity, what does that look like? Well, I believe that also has to do with humility, but then it's not so much grace, it is passion. And it's an interesting difference in that the common denominator there is humility and that you don't think you're the most important person in the room.
Okay.
But what you can do in that regard is you now give people the opportunity to build and grow. Okay. Because now you're working together to figure out what that next thing might be that you want to do.
Okay.
And you show a passion towards getting it done.
Okay.
So while humility and grace give you the opportunity to engage and to provide somebody room so that their fear is not there, once you get that relationship in place, you can now engage further and start to lead the activity whereby you're looking to, with humility in that conversation, but with passion, drive an outcome. Drive
Okay,
an outcome, if
gotcha.
you will. But you're now doing it with somebody in a relationship that's now been built upon something around trust as
Trust,
opposed
right.
to
That's
just
what I was thinking.
without going and saying, you need to go off and do this or I know what you're thinking and you're wrong. You got to go do it that way. You know, it just allows for that real human complexity that's there. It's just there because, like I said, the norms and standards or whatever background they come through is a very driving factor in what they're thinking. Are you sure the dog isn't part of the
If
conversation?
I
Because I
saw you,
was.
that dog has been silent since 7 this morning. I'm not exaggerating. And now
I think
she's barking.
the dog wanted to hear more about what I was saying. I'm pretty sure that was the deal,
All
right?
right. That was actually quite profound. All right. So I was taking some notes here. I know that you would be open to complexity. I know that you would be open to the
Diversity,
variety.
really. Yeah, it's that
Exactly.
diversity. It's the
Good.
diver absolutely. And by the way, it's the fact that the complexity exists that is beautiful. I mean, it really is an indication of this God's creation, in my view, around just this
All right.
beautiful creation. It is very complex. It's very complex.
It is.
What happens though is we'll take those complexities and turn them the wrong way around. We'll actually look at them with disfavor, or we won't appreciate them, or we'll dislike them, or we'll think that they're again wrong, or something like
that.
Right. We just don't treat them and just appreciating the fact that complexity is there. We actually want to try to fix it.
Well, let me run this by you. You said we have an incessant need to be right and relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Diversity challenges that.
It does.
If I'm on your team and I represent something about a project, I maybe have the client point of view or finance or whatever, it doesn't matter. And I need to bring something to you. I want to have a voice. I want to have some mm-hmm. impact. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm not in it for myself and I could be for a attention, acknowledgement, promotion, even if it's not the case, I believe I'm onto something that's important for the team to know, for the team to account for, right? And so I want to be sure that I get that on the table. I get that in the mix of things. I could see you being open, welcoming in the conversation with the team, the diversity, the complexity, and working it through with the team. I could see you leading the conversation through with the team to capitalize on the richness that is in the team's thinking, in the team's experience. And I think that would make someone feel, I think you would make sure that somebody could have their voice, get a point across that they needed to, so that they wouldn't get lost. They would not get lost. And I think what could happen is I might actually find more to connect my thoughts to.
Because your fear is not there. So if your fear is abated, you're not afraid to bring an idea forward, or in other words, you're not afraid to come in the room and say something that it's not going to be accepted. They're going to think I'm stupid, right? Or that I'm just different, right? So having that humility and grace says, I know that's going to happen in the room, right? Whereas I can capture that and look for the areas where there's an ability to have common understanding, right? From which you can drive ideas, you can drive initiatives with an outcome and put some passion into it, because you have people that are looking to get that same outcome, if you will. But it was built upon the fact that you had a diversity of ideas in the room.
Right.
Right.
And so
at that point, you're on that same page. I think what happens though is now you want to stay on the same page, but you really aren't helping yourself by trying to stay on that same page, because you're now losing the opportunity to move to the next page.
Well, let me back
whatever
up.
That page might be.
Let me back up half a step. Don't lose that thought.
Mm-hmm.
You said not afraid to bring something to the table. I would add to that, because I agree, I would add to it, not afraid to hear other things at the table.
Right. Right.
Right? Not afraid
I think
to
hear it. The listening part is so important. It really is. And I'm of the strong faith that this humility and grace is very inspiring. Well, leaders, by the way, this gets back to leadership. Leaders are only leaders if they have followers, people willing to follow them.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to follow somebody who has their own self-interest. You got to move from a mode of selfishness to selflessness. It may sound contrarian or contrary to what you think.
Right.
But when you move from selfishness to selflessness, people get the idea that you're in it for them as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're building up the idea that they matter, because they do. They do matter.
Yes, they do.
And so confidence grows. The self-esteem grows. People can contribute at a level that they feel that they want to contribute without being forced or having fear. And they can contribute a conversation, and then you can actually get something done.
Do you know the
right?
name?
The
name
actually get something done.
Yes. Do you know the name David Marquette?
I do not.
He's mm-hmm. he's pioneered a consulting practice around the notion of intent-based leadership. He was a nuclear submarine captain, mm-hmm. and he tells a very funny story about having prepared for a year, Dale, to take command of a ship, and at the last minute, the ship changed. So he's on a ship he doesn't know, and he's barking out orders that don't make any sense on that ship. And he has to sit down with his leadership team at one point and say, we have an inspection coming up, and I don't know this ship, and I can't learn it in 2 weeks. I just spent 12 months learning about a different one that I'm not on. What are we going to do? And they talked it through and they concluded that he should shut up. And in a TEDx kind of talk, he tells a very funny story about, but that's not what leaders do. And the audience laughs and he goes on. Then he said, I thought about it and I realized they were right. I didn't know the ship. I couldn't contribute much to the inspection. I had to let them lead it. And he hit on an idea, Dale. He said he was going to stop issuing commands and start asking questions. Apart from the order to fire, which he retained as the captain's prerogative, he said he was going to get guys to tell him what they thought should be done and why in any situation, what should be done and why. And he said what it led to was the realization he had that you could retain control and create followers, which he wasn't in a position to do at the time, or you could share authority and create leaders, which is what he ended up doing. And not only did everybody step up with ideas about what should be done and why with him, but they did with each other. So he actually created a team environment unlike anything I think he'd probably seen in his other commands, a more traditional kind of command. Anyway, I thought of that when we were talking about the diversity of thinking. And you know,
Spirit of
I
thinking.
knew that you would, right. I knew that would resonate with
Yeah,
you.
makes all sense in the world. Yeah, and you want people who know what they're doing, and people who are willing to come in and say when they don't know what they're doing, right? That they really do want some help getting something. You want people like that in your room. You know, you talk about intent-based leadership. So at Battelle, where I'm at today, it's an amazing culture. It's a science and research organization, a very large not-for-profit. The culture there has been brought into this same kind of thinking where you enter a conversation with positive intent. You know, just remain curious. You know, just remain curious. And it really is, it's very impacting because the organization is coming together around that thought process that having positive intent, understanding, you know, how big your team is, understanding the shadow that you're casting, you know, just all these these realities that exist in an organization are helping people see, you know, how they are actually being seen and seeing others, right? And it's very, very helpful. This is the first place I've worked, we've had that kind of culture building, culture advocating kind of activity. But it's in line, right in line with the same thing, because you're going to walk into your room, and through humility and grace, you're going to realize that somebody else needs to lead that activity, not you. You know, you're not fit for it. And so you want people to build a passion around what that person's doing, because that's what we need to be doing, not what you'd want to be doing. And that's okay, because in effect, you're leading by advocating an idea. You may not be leading the actual outcome, but you're leading others to accept the fact that there's something we should be doing that we're not doing today, or doing it differently, different process. You know, I would say too that from an organizational perspective, when you start to have that kind of dynamic, okay, leaders will evolve naturally. You don't have to train them because it's in-flight training, right? They're constantly seeing how it's done, so you're building them naturally. I don't have to send them off to some school somewhere, Harvard Business School, whatever. They can actually learn it in the organization because you're seeing it real time.
So what you're describing is a way of getting folks on the same page, whether that's the intent or not. You're going to get people on the same page by the kind of approach you take, using humility and grace, engaging people in their subject matter expertise, recognizing, that's the word I want, recognizing the richness and the diversity that's in within a team, let's say, and they represent greater diversity from other parts of the organization. So you're getting people on the same page, maybe in a my I have a theory about same page, Dale, which is we all are only on and can only be on our own pages. That's just our human point of reference to any situation in a marriage, in the neighborhood, and at work. We are on our own page. If there's a same page to get on, we have to create it. And we don't create it by abandoning and leaving ours behind. We have to connect ours to it. I think what you're describing is a powerful way to create a same page and allow people to make connections between their own and the same page. Go ahead.
I would actually put it a little bit differently.
Sure.
I see what you're saying. I would say the page already exists. We have to find it. That's what I mean by the complexities. I think in my faith, the way God created us was it was meant for us to relate. And that page exists. It's not like it doesn't.
So you think right? It's more of a discovery process than
it's a discovery for us. Uh-huh. We're going to find out something new we didn't know. That page existed because the book exists, right? The page existed. We just have an opportunity to find that page together and actually get something done.
So less creation and more discovery.
Lots of discovery all the time. And I think discovery actually happens when we're least expecting it, because we're vulnerable. When we come into a situation where we're allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. we actually allow ourselves greater degrees of confidence to discover.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why relationships are so darn important, because, you know, in a tight relationship, you can be really vulnerable with somebody.
Yeah.
Now those are, and you're not going to have deep relationships with everybody,
right.
Which is fine. You have family, you have faith, you have your friends, you have work relationships. All those things are a little bit different, and you respect that they exist. And every one of them can get on a page and mm-hmm. do something phenomenal. Every one of them can.
That vulnerability, I think with that vulnerability comes an openness. Which is where the discoveries, which mm-hmm. is why discoveries are possible, because people are open to, oh, I hadn't thought about that, right? There's that,
exactly.
that mindset. But, this is a big but, you have to make that safe to be done that way.
Now, absolutely.
We've talked about this in a couple of different ways already in the last, no, go ahead.
It's a spot on, because I know that there's a lot of bad in this world. There just is. People will abuse the fact that there's complexities. They'll manipulate them. They'll abuse them. They'll try to take advantage of them. So it's not like you walk into some place with just this idea that it's all going to be hunky-dory.
Oh, yeah, right.
You have, that's very dangerous.
Right.
That because you have to have a degree of morality and ethics. You know, that has to be there. That framework has to be there. And understand, this is where it gets really kind of interesting in my view, is everybody has come from a little bit of a different spin on what those moralities and ethics look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the legalities.
Yeah.
Because you know that what you know,
yeah.
you know as well as I do, laws can be written and people will tell you what laws were made to be broken.
Right.
Even there. So it's because I'll just tell you right off the bat. I think there's a lot of brokenness in this world. There just is a ton of brokenness in this world. And I will tell you that my faith in Jesus Christ really does help me deal with the fact that it's broken and that I can do something about it by loving others. I can do that. I can make it not about me. I can make it about Jesus, and I can make it about sharing that love with others. And that allows me to be vulnerable, allows me to really be confident in entering a room, being humble, showing grace, not having to be that guy. You know, I can be part of the conversation. I can lead the conversation. I can be the action officer. you know what I'm saying? And it's okay. But that whole thing about getting on a page begins with some fundamental thinking that, for instance, are we going to build cars or
right.
are we going to build baby buggy bumpers?
Right.
Right. You have to have a framework you're going to work within. You can't just walk in ad hoc.
Right.
And I think that's why you start to formulate relationships around people with common interests, common understanding, common objectives, if you will, because now you at least have a foundation to work from. You have to start with something.
Well, I like what you said, and I appreciate you bringing your personal views to discussing them here with me, because I want to, you've touched on this. I want to translate that into how that happens at work, because I know that you are authentic that way. What you're telling me is how you would be in a work environment. So back to the idea of creating safety, because some people would take advantage of a situation for their own gain. If you were intending to run a process with others and you wanted to approach it from the standpoint of grace and humility, you were willing to accept the vulnerability, openness, tap into the diversity and the complexity, you have to set some ground rules so that others don't take advantage of that either in the room or outside the room. When their meeting's mm-hmm. over, people can go play individual unilateral games and try to game the system. When people see you say, I'm gonna posit that if people see you say, look, folks, here's how we should do this. Here's how I want this to go from a standpoint of the culture, the process of how we work together. And people see you over the course of just a couple, three meetings, put your money where your mouth is, that creates safety. And then that would, I think, create the safety people would need to engage in the way you're describing. I think you probably think it's the most productive from a business standpoint and maybe the most fulfilling from a human standpoint.
Very fulfilling. A couple of things about what you said. So I think it starts with establishing, again, a understanding, if you will, or a expectation. Because I work with some really fantastic people.
Right.
And there's instances in which we have fairly new people as well. They got great experience, but they're fairly new at what they're doing.
Right.
So there's obviously an opportunity for them to learn. And here's a couple of dynamics about that. So I think we can achieve something around these areas. So get that common understanding or that common commitment to actually achieving something. So now once you have that common objective or that common outcome in mind, you can start working towards it, right? But you work towards it with a common understanding around it. It may not be exactly the same, but it's the same enough that you can actually get everybody engaged into it, right? And what I would say is as people will be contentious about it, which is fine. People may go want to go off the grid with it, which is actually understandable too. Here's what I have to remember. There may be something deeper for that individual. Mm-hmm. There may be something more involved with that person than I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And rather get upset about it, love that person. You know, just understand that they're in a place right now. Something is bothering them. It could be personal. It could be work related. It could be something else that it's causing them to do what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's more important for me to understand and to help that person than to achieve an outcome. That may sound odd, but that's exactly what builds relationships. It's more about that other person than it is about me. It's not about me achieving something. It's about, I see that individual's having some issues. Maybe I'm having the issues. Whatever the case might be,
right.
It's about making the person important and the outcome will occur. If you don't make the person important, that outcome is not going to be near as rich.
Translate that for me into some specifics. How would you love that person, but not at the expense of the others, of the team effort?
Well, so you don't handle, first of all, you don't handle it in the room.
Right.
You know, you don't handle it in the room. You really want to spend time understanding where that person's coming from. It's a separate conversation. It
gotcha.
Really is.
Right, right.
To because they may not feel comfortable expressing their real feelings in the room.
Sure.
And I have to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to spend the time to find out why is it that they're acting the way that they are, the reason they're having such an issue with it,
mm-hmm.
the reason that they're not saying anything. It could be that they're very quiet, they're not saying anything. And just handle it separately and just build an understanding with them at a level where they are or where I am.
Okay.
Because it's not, if I were to dismiss them,
mm-hmm.
I'm actually missing the opportunity to include their diversity in the conversation.
Fair point.
Right.
I've done this for a long time. It came from the first job I had out of college. I've made it a habit to describe what I've observed. So if I carefully describe behavior I see, as opposed to or rather than saying something that sounds evaluative or judgmental about the behavior I see.
Stay away from judgmental.
I find it opens up someone who might even be behaving belligerently or mm-hmm. undermining it, right? So if I say, hey, you're behaving belligerently or you're being disruptive, or if I use those kinds of words, they have an emotional reaction that they have to manage to have the conversation with me, and I find it gets unproductive. If I say, hey, you're quiet, I notice you're quiet in the meetings, and I understand that you have more to say outside the meetings. That's just an example. If I could observe and describe behavior I see, I find it's easier for people to own up to say, all right, let me tell you what's going on. What's been your experience?
So what I found is very effective there. And again, it really is just wanting to love somebody. It just really is wanting to understand and to show them that you do have, we want to make it about something that's going to help them as well, not just yourself. Rather, I think when you say that you're being disruptive, that's immediately that signal that you're wrong and you're not relevant. Right.
There you
going
go.
Back to that
there you
again.
Go. Right. Right.
You're immediately putting something on saying, you know what you did, what you're saying, the way you're acting is not right and it's not relevant. And boom, right away, the defensive mechanism goes up mm-hmm. and they just sink deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I think the better way to handle it is, clearly, I am saying something or doing something that is not resonating with you. How can I put this in a way which will help build, if you will, an understanding around what we're trying to accomplish so that you can contribute effectively?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I need to take a different tact on this. It's your experience with. Maybe you have experience I don't have around this. And I'd love to learn from you.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've put it into a positive context, which you want. And that's that grace piece, because that's that grace piece.
Gotcha.
Says,
right.
I am confident. I'm confident that I'm approaching this with a real sense of loving that individual. And I'm doing it with grace. And now we can get back to some level of understanding. It's never going to be perfect, by the way.
Right.
Forget. I mean, it's just not. We're humans.
Right.
Not looking for perfection. Or you're looking for opportunity to really love and to move things forward. And then you can have a way to get that person's passion. I tell you something, I've found some people in the world who everybody else would say was an introvert, but once you find their passion, they're on it. They're gone. And they go in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
because now you found a passion with them.
Yeah, I agree.
And now you don't have to do anything more than to just let them follow that passion.
Yeah, I agree.
But you've done it by, first of all, exercising grace, right? So I would say that this whole area of contention that you get into around feelings and much what the case might be, I think that is what really teaches us to love. Because once we recognize that, we have to get to a different place than where we are and put that person first and allow that relationship to move to a different level. It's just so satisfying when that happens.
I could see you putting that person first in the one-on-one conversation between you. Meaning have the conversation with them about themselves first and not the project or not the task or not whatever that you're engaged in with them. So you're not taking it, you're not starting from the standpoint of, hey, I need you to be representing the point of view of the client, or I need you to be focused on the budget and the finances. You're not, it's not that. It's what you said a moment ago. I'm putting something in a way that's not resonating with you, or you're thinking something different than I'm thinking that I might be able to learn from. What is it? I can see, is that what you mean by putting them first?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And putting them first doesn't necessarily say that they're always going to be right. Okay.
Right.
But it does allow you to have a conversation, right?
Right.
And because,
right.
Because I'm not going to be in a position to always know where their head is.
Right.
I'm not a psychiatrist, you know, and I don't know always what's driving somebody. People are very, very complex. You know that, Lou. And it'd be really, it'd be a lot of hubris on my part to think that I really figured, no. Now I'm limited. I'm as broken and faulted as everybody else. I don't have some magical thing. What I have is, like I said, Jesus Christ on my heart. And I have this confidence that as he loved me or loves me, I can love others.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to enter these conversations in such a way that I'm okay with being vulnerable. I'm okay with saying that I've got brokenness too. So let's have a conversation that will educate me, because
right.
I want to be educated as well.
Yeah.
And I learn a lot from people.
Yeah.
I just do. I learn so much about myself just by listening to other people. Yeah. It's just amazing. And by the way, you still get something done because the outcome doesn't go away. You know, the thing you want to get done does not go away.
Right.
Okay. So that's not going away. It's how you're getting there, though. You're not dismissing people. You're not trying to be the king of the hill. Not to find the wall be all. And now that page matters. Okay. Right. That page really, really matters because now it's not about the page anymore. It's about the relationships. It's about doing something together that really does get something done. And that, I think that when you get to it, just one way of putting that, you know, when we leave this world, what we leave is the kinds of relationships that we've done for people, if you will, and the kinds of things that we've built. All that stuff really does matter much more than some report that we wrote, which matters, if you will, in the near term. But as far as lasting, yeah, exactly.
When is the point, though, when they've got to exercise some vulnerability back with you if you're being open and honest with them and saying, tell me what's going on, what can I do, what can we do, and they won't, they could harm the effort that the team is working on, a project, a task. Mm-hmm. I can see you trying, and I would think often successfully doing what you've described, but if it doesn't work, what's the point at which you say, I can't keep trying, I've got to make a different decision?
Yeah, so that's why a framework is so important. You know, it's that framework. And I have a framework of faith that I really do rely upon a lot around that, because every situation is different, and I don't always know what's going on. God has different ways of educating me as well, right? But here, you know, I'll give you an idea. So working at Battelle, just like I said, they have this culture framework that they're building. And they're building it around some very solid principles around positive intent, stay curious, know your accountability, understand where how accountable you are in the organization. All these things, just really good, really good foundational things for what to be thinking. And I think when you get to the point that somebody doesn't want to be a part of that anymore, you have to help them understand maybe Battelle's not the right place for you anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't want to be accountable, right? If you don't want to have positive intent, if you don't want to learn to understand how to deal with other people who are in your shadow, if you will, and how to help affect them more positively.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do that stuff, got it. Doesn't make you a bad person. Just may not be the place for you.
Right.
And so you have to understand from that structure, you're now setting an expectation. We have an expectation.
Right.
If you don't want to do that, we get it. And I think that's the way you have to do that. You have to set some sort of framework mm-hmm. around relating to people, relating with each other. I think Battelle's done it effectively with their kind of cultural expectation, if you will. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been very effective in that. You know, the organization has just made tremendous leaps and bounds just within the last 4 years. And it's all been built upon this cultural kind of thinking, you know, that it really does take an organization to do what we're trying to do, which is, you know, it's taking science to society is the way I like to think of it. You think these really cool experimental things, and we're moving them to useful things, right?
That's cool.
You know, we're not a you know, software company. We're not a platform company necessarily. We're the science, engineering, and build it, make it work kind of folks.
That's cool.
Right? So you have to have a lot of moving parts to get that done, right? So you have to have a lot of people that want to work together to make that happen.
But also, yeah, definitely. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But also those principles of the culture, those are principles by which you gather people who want to aspire to them, and then you can do great things. And if someone doesn't want to aspire to them, like you said, doesn't make them a bad person. They might just not be a fit for us right now.
That'd be a good fit for us or them, by the way.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So you
you got to stay away from making it personal, I think, because when you start making it personal, and you're going to that back to that right and relevant thing one more time.
Well, it's personal in the sense that if you don't want to aspire to these principles, that's about you, and that's personal in that sense. But that's okay. You're not making a moral judgment about it.
No,
You're just saying
it's
that's
not. You got.
okay. But I can't have you on the team operating in contradiction to what the team's aspiring to if you're heading in a different
Yeah.
direction.
And back to kind of that humility and grace, humility and passion kind of thing. They're very fundamental things. There is no one way to do it. For instance, getting back to the positive intent thing, there's no way, one way to generate positive intent. You can make that a very personal thing where your strengths,
True.
your education, your background, your thinking is that's going to come to the party and actually create positive intent amongst people who have a diverse set of opinions around things,
That's a
right?
great point. You would welcome
Exactly.
diversity within diversity of ways in which to live that principle. Yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I think it gives people, it makes people feel, or gives them the sense that they, if they care to, they can find a way to belong there. All you have to
If they
do
care
is
to.
try. You can bring yourself to it. So if you are a certain Myers-Briggs type or a certain DISC type, it doesn't matter. If you just care to, you can find a way to connect to those principles and live them the way you do, and at least working for you, that would be welcome.
Yeah, and when you're working in an environment which is heavy R&D, you want diversity in that room. You really want a lot of critical thinking going on around what makes sense, right? And what's really gonna help move this thing to that next level from a readiness level 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, which has different variations of how you're gonna apply it, how you're gonna test it, how you're gonna operationalize it and deploy it. All those things are just heavy with a bunch of requirements around them. And you may get to one stage, and what you did back in the second the stage two may not actually be very helpful at all. You got to go back to the drawing board again. So yeah, it's very interesting environment. But I do believe to a large extent that unless you're willing to be vulnerable and willing to be wrong, by the way, and willing to not always be relevant, you got to be willing to do that to engage in an environment where a whole lot of ideas, a whole lot of initiatives and innovations are there. You just got to be willing to say, you know what, that is a better way to do it, and that's fine.
Well, you hire good people, smart people, and you hope committed people, right? That's a cultural fit thing, and you just have to you find that out over time.
Very much so.
You want those people to bring all of themselves to their jobs, to the work, to the team. It's what makes no. So okay, this kind of flips around a little bit. That's what makes something so rich.
It does.
That's what
It
makes
makes
something
it richer. And even though it's not going to always be perfect, it's better than it was, right? And it's advancing
Well,
the
okay, so
whole idea.
you've said, where's the you beauty, where did I write that down?
There's
Beautiful complexity. So in complexity theory, as you know, one of the things that complexity theory tells us would happen is in the interaction of parts of a system, say a team, if you've invited that diversity and complexity to be part of the discussion, part of the functioning of the team, it has an emergent property. That's the phrase from complexity theory. Things emerge that would not have otherwise maybe been revealed or come to the fore. It's not planned. It isn't something you put on an agenda. You don't say, let's be innovative, and then you brainstorm. So things just emerge from the interaction. And I know I've been involved in these conversations, and I know you have. You could leave a really amazing conversation and not know. Not you could reconstruct it in your mind and not be able to tease out who had what idea, who led what, who, right, it just right. comes together in a very organic way. But that's the beauty of that situation when it's safe, the diversity is welcome. You sort of embrace the complexity. Look, let's not be afraid of this. The complexity exists. If we put our heads in the sand mm-hmm. and pretend it doesn't, we just get, it's going to operate on us. It's going to affect us. Let's embrace it. Some very creative things emerge from that, and a lot of energy right. too. I think a lot of good energy.
Yeah, and that, and again, those complexities exist in a broken world where there's a lot of brokenness.
Yeah. yeah.
So just wrap your head around the fact that there's brokenness and there's complexities, and you can take a look at it and say, "Oh, that's hopeless." No. I mean, taking hope into that situation is just, gosh, it's just ultimate. It's just because you're walking in with not with opportunity.
Opportunity was the word I was thinking. Yeah.
Just, you know, to actually help somebody move away from being so bogged down with their complexities and brokenness that they're free, if you will, from just being bogged down by that. That doesn't make them go away. Right. It doesn't make them go away. You're just doing something with them.
Constructive
now.
With them. Yeah.
Construct them with them now. And so it's not about winning an argument.
Right.
It's just not.
Right. No, it's
having the argument's fine. You can have the argument.
Yes.
But if you have an argument for the purpose of just winning it, have you learned anything?
No.
Probably not.
So, you're going to end up where you started with what you thought.
Well, and you're just going to argue. You're just going to want to argue some more because now you're pumped up with the fact that you won an argument. Therefore, now you're just going to be, you know, pompous. So,
well, one of the things I like to that's true. It feeds on itself. One of the things I like.
It does.
It does. One of the things I like to do is think as one is ask guests where. From their training, what models, methods, theories from their training is have informed what we've talked about. I find it fascinating, and I want to highlight this. I find it fascinating that so much of your work life comes from your faith. So much of what you do at work, how you see things, how you operate mm-hmm. in the work environment, comes from your faith. So while you had models and methods and theories from your electrical engineering technology training, and professional development over the years, you know what's in Harvard Business Review, you know management theories, you know organizational theories. I find it really fascinating how much you've used your faith to inform work.
It's not just work.
Yes, I'm sure it's not. We're talking about work. I'm sure it's not.
It really just consumes my life, and I can't tell you how much confidence and joy I have from that, because things blow up. Things go bad. They just do. And having the ability to rely upon the fact that I'm loved and that I've got the grace of Christ with me is just, that's just, I can't tell you how, it's just amazing. It's freeing, if you will.
I was
getting back to that. I can do these things because of what Christ has given me. I can't do them because of myself. And that's probably the biggest thing that I would take, that have anybody take away from that is, it's not just the fact that I have faith, it's who I have faith in.
When you said freeing, when you said freeing, I was literally thinking the words, it seems to have put you at ease.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Peace.
Peace, yeah.
Peace of God that surpasses all understanding. It really is. It's there. I don't have to fight for it.
Right.
I don't have to prove it. It's just there. And it allows for me to love in situations where prior to my prior time without Jesus, I don't think I could have loved. I would have just been trying to fight my way through it, be the guy that made it right, you know, fix it myself.
No, I get it.
You know, and it's does just sit there. And I would also share out of that there's a harmony mm-hmm. that comes from frailty. All right. And what I mean by that is that once I realize that I'm broken, I got stuff that's just wrong with me, and I'm highly complex, I was okay with the fact that I had frailties. I was just okay with it because they're just there. I can't make them go away, but I can certainly have the peace of God with me to help deal with them and to love others when I know that they have the same fundamental things. So when you talk about getting on the same page, kind of back to the original thought process here, it's the page already exists. Mm-hmm. It's just there because of all the complexities and programs, it's just there. And once you find somebody that you can actually deal with in life or have an opportunity to work with in life, it does start to free them as well. Mm-hmm. It frees them from that same fact, just because they understand it's okay to be frail. It's just okay. You know, that doesn't mean I'm going to go out declaring it, you know, and I'm not going to feel sorry for myself for it. Just understand that it's there, because I could actually enter in a conversation. I've had this happen before where I went into a conversation and I had something I wanted to prove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And so I went in with this rather contentious mindset and the person says, "What are you talking about?" So I don't have an issue with that at all.
You have yourself all worked up about, yeah.
Exactly. And that I'm like, I really don't know why.
Now that you've asked.
Now that you've asked, it's a good question. I should go back and think about that a little bit more, right?
I get it.
And I will tell you, though, the degrees I have, which is the engineering technology degree and the master's in engineering technology management, both of them are foundational in that. Engineering, much like science and math, is such a great way to look at the complexities.
Right.
Not necessarily the human soul, okay, because that has its own complexities, but it's just complexity of this world.
Right.
All the science, all the technology, and all the things that we've done are all from the original creation. Beautiful mind that we have to build this stuff. And guess what? It's about people working together.
Yeah.
You know, people working together, trying to, you know, building stuff from this creation.
Beautiful.
Making things. Yeah, it really is very beautiful. Yeah.
Dale, this has been amazing. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. I really enjoy talking about this kind of stuff where a lot of people see problems. I see potential. Think that the opportunities to actually work with people, especially contentious people, are their fire defining moments. I mean, they're fire refining moments. We have a chance to actually refine who and what we are as an individual by working with people that can be contentious, because we learn about ourselves. We have way more potential to love than we know. We just don't necessarily, expose ourselves to loving somebody because we don't want to be vulnerable. It's really kind of interesting. However, our best building moments happen when we become vulnerable and we deal with that contention by virtue of loving them, and it refines us and teaches us that there's so much more to life than just trying to be right or trying to prove yourself right to somebody else. There's just so much more.
That was, we're going to close with that. That was very profound and very beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
My friend. I'll be in touch.
Take care, my friend.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Dale for recording today's episode. You can find it at iseewhatyoumean.castos.com, plus all the usual places. Send questions and suggestions through the app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating if you can't. Let me know why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless we shouldn't.